Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and online at WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer. It's that time of the summer when people are beginning to return from summer vacation. I just spent the last few weeks trackside at Saratoga Racecourse upstate. While I was doing that, though, our music director, WNYC's own George Preston, was putting his summer vacation time to far better use. George went to Europe, where he checked out two of that continent's leading music festivals, and joins us today to report back on one of the traditions which is richest in history and tradition in Europe, and one that is taking festivals there in a new direction. George, welcome back.
Thank you very much, John. How'd you do with the racetrack?
Oh, you know, up and down, a little more down than up this year, but... Now, I mean, you went to Bayreuth.
I sure did.
Which is, as I said before the newscast, Mecca for fans of the operas of Wagner.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that if you want to go to see Wagner in Bayreuth, you have to write in basically 7, 8, 9, 10 years to get tickets.
That's right. Unless you are fortunate enough to have some press connections or know the Wagner family or have some political connections in Germany, you got to write in year after year after year. And then after 7, 8, 9 years or so, they say, all right, this year you can have a ticket to this performance.
They tell you
tickets to this performance. Yeah, you don't get to choose.
So this basically, this was like a pilgrimage for you going to Bayreuth.
Oh, sure. I'm a huge Wagner fan. And it was the coolest thing ever, I have to tell you. And one of the things that struck me about being in that ambiance is the audience itself. Being with a group of people who are so into the music of Richard Wagner that they have written in year after year after year, and then they've come from all corners of the world to this, really, it's a beautiful little town, but it's kind of remote. It's a little backwater town in eastern Bavaria. And there's not much to do there except go to the Wagner operas during the day and enjoy a nice Bavarian meal at night and walk around and really be steeped in the tradition of Richard Wagner.
It strikes me, I mean, in a funny way, like Saratoga in August, where everybody there is sort of obsessed with the horse racing. You go to dinner at night and the people at the next table, no matter how fancy their dress or how many kids they have with them, talking about the day's races, the next day's races. It sounds like that kind of community of shared obsession is what Bayreuth is all about.
Oh, it certainly is. And when you go into the festival hall, into the Festspielhaus, and you sit down for the performance that begins at 4 in the afternoon each day, I should add, and those doors close, and the lights dim, and you sit there in pin-drop silence waiting for that music to begin, it's unlike any other opera house experience I've ever had.
Well, now, what is it that makes the actual theater, this Festspielhaus, so unique?
Well, it's designed, actually, by Wagner himself after a section of an ancient Greek amphitheater from Epidaurus. And if you can imagine some kind of a pie-shaped section of a Greek amphitheater, that's what it's like. All the seats face the stage at Bayreuth, which is unlike most opera houses where they're in a horseshoe pattern, so some people are looking across at each other. All the seats are focused on the stage. Mm. And if you've ever been to the Metropolitan Opera, for example, you're sitting there waiting for the opera to begin. You see the conductor walk into the pit and everybody claps. Well, at Bayreuth, you can't see the pit at all. You can't see the conductor at all because there is a kind of a shield that curves over the back of the conductor's head, blocking the view of the pit from the audience. And there's a kind of another baffle that descends from the stage down into the pit. So there's not only a visual component that you don't know when the music's about to start because you can't see the downbeat. It just appears from all around you. There's also this theatrical sense of moment that the music starts and it's part of the drama that's going on stage. And actually, I was very lucky. I got a chance to talk with Mark Albrecht, who was one of the conductors there this summer. He was leading the Flying Dutchman. And we went down into the pit and sat there and had a chat. And Mark told me about some of the special things he has to do to make the music happen from the pit at Bayreuth.
That's the most fantastic thing about this acoustic, that you don't see how the music is prepared to sound. You can locate exactly the sound, which is fine and fantastic and surprising all the time. But really, I mean, the kind of beautiful sound what's coming outside, it's really not easy to produce it inside here, because all the winds, who are really exactly sitting 2 or 3 meters in the depth under the stage, they can't even listen to the singers, not at all. So this is different from all other open pits where they can really accompany and follow. So here it's all the work of the conductor to bring everybody together with the stage.
That's conductor Mark Albrecht on location in the Festspielhaus in Bayreuth, Germany, speaking with our guest, WNYC Music Director George Preston. So it seems like, I mean, you said Wagner designed this theater himself.
Yeah.
There's a real kind of challenge to the players and the conductor to make the music work in this setting.
I mean,
did it work?
It worked great. You know, there's a blend of the music at Bayreuth that you don't get anywhere else. There's a little lack of the kind of aggressive sound you get from the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra. But all in all, I think this is the way Wagner intended it. One of the problems you have with presenting Wagner in normal opera houses is the orchestra is so big, and it plays so loudly that you have to have really huge voices in order to get the music across. And this isn't necessarily the case at Bayreuth.
So what about the singers then? Does that mean you get a different type of singer in Bayreuth than you would at the Met or La Scala or Covent Garden?
Well, you do in a sense. There are some that you will hear at other theaters, but there are many singers that I heard at Bayreuth that you don't often hear in the United States. And more lyric singers are able to tackle these Wagnerian roles at Bayreuth. And more up-and-coming singers go there, and they don't get paid all that much. Everyone goes there for kind of a token fee, the singers, the orchestra members, and the chorus as well. It's they gather for the love of the music and the sense of community and being together in order to do this music. I would say the two standout singers, kind of personal discoveries for me from this season, were Nina Stemme, who's a Swedish soprano who sang Isolde in this wonderful new production they have there. And it was an incredibly moving performance for me. And another one was this American tenor who I briefly knew years ago in Boston, and I thought he'd fallen off the face of the earth. This guy's name is Stephen Gould, and he had kind of quit singing for a while and found a teacher who discovered that this heavy German repertoire worked with his voice. At age 37, he made a last-ditch audition tour to Europe, got a job, and now he's one of the leading heroic tenors singing this repertoire. And I was able to talk with Steve Gould about some of his standout experiences singing at the Bayreuth Festival.
I remember standing at the Sitzprobe, that's where we come together with singers just with the orchestra for the first time, and the orchestra was just so overwhelming, I forgot to sing. You know, I was listening to this incredible sound. And that was definitely a high point. And people asked me, you know, how did you handle the stress your first year there? And I thought, you know, this is one of the most delightful experiences of my entire career.
So, George Preston, Stephen Gould's experience is kind of akin to a baseball player as a 30-year-old rookie.
Yeah, I would say so.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, as you say, you know, these singers, they come to Bayreuth, they sing for a small fee. It's the experience. It's the kind of once-in-a-lifetime chance to sing Wagner in the house that Wagner literally built.
Uh-huh.
What's in it for the orchestra and the chorus?
Well, the orchestra and the chorus are renowned. They're really legendary, and they are fantastic. I think the primary thing that brings them together is a love for playing Wagner's music and singing Wagner's music. And you know the old adage in the theater that there are no small parts, there are only small actors. It's that way with Wagner. You know, everyone is integral to bringing off a successful performance, and the audience is into this. It's not really a star system. Sometimes the chorus will get a much bigger ovation than the stars or the orchestra. One particular night when I was there, or day, they have this very controversial, shall we say, production of Parsifal. And I have to confess, I didn't get it at all. But and most of the audience booed the production itself. But they cheered the singers and the orchestra and the chorus. But I think there's also a special family feeling to working there. If you've been there for a while, you come together for a month every summer with people from all over the world. One of the choristers I talked to is a guy who lives here in New York. His name is Scott Carlton, and he described some of his experience of just being with his colleagues at Bayreuth.
The wonderful work with the colleagues, after a few years you get to know your colleagues as friends, you get to know their families. When there's a birthday or an anniversary, a barrel of beer is brought up into the dressing rooms. And there is that atmosphere of work that is so congenial here.
So it's an international chorus there in Bayreuth.
Oh, yeah.
And obviously Scott is, as you say, a New Yorker. George, you mentioned this year's production of Parsifal raised more than a few eyebrows. Yeah. I actually saw some just absolutely scathing reviews of Parsifal. What was going on?
Search me. I mean, you know.
Was it one of these, you know, like,
well, let me
set in the
this.
Back room of a mafia restaurant type deals?
The director, Mr. Schlingensief, had been to Africa, and he threw a lot of African symbolism on stage. Well, you know, the story of Parsifal is pretty convoluted to begin with.
Yeah.
And when you're layering then a lot of African symbolism on top of it, and you have projected videos of different things, and the Holy Grail is a rabbit.
Sounds like the Monty Python version,
yeah,
actually.
I'm sure if he wrote a book and you read it, you'd understand it, but sitting there watching it, it was pretty opaque to me.
Okay. It strikes me that the Bayreuth Festival, probably not a place for beginning Wagner fans.
I would say you would want to do your homework before you go there. Yeah, there are no translations. There are no titles. It's all the works, of course, are in German, and it takes place in Germany. So the native audience understands it. The acoustic of the house makes the language intelligible if you understand German. But by the very nature of how you have to go about getting tickets, writing in year after year after year, there are no casual spectators at Bayreuth. Everyone is amazingly involved, and that is one of the most fantastic things about being there, is being with this crowd of people who are so into this and getting to know them at the hour-long intermissions over a beer and a Wurst.
All right. Well, George Preston is WNYC's music director. We've been talking about one of the two festivals that George went to in Europe for his summer vacation. The other one, very different, and we'll talk about that in a moment. Tonight, evening music, a little bit of Wagner right here in New York.
You bet. We've got a special concert that was recorded at Tanglewood a few weeks ago. It features the Tanglewood Festival Orchestra, the students playing an amazing performance under James Levine of Act 1 of Wagner's Die Walküre and Act 3, the last act of The Twilight of the Gods from The Ring Cycle. And Deborah Voigt headlines the cast, so that'll start at 8 o'clock on Evening Music tonight.
And in between acts, you can hear James Levine talking about this performance with George Preston. The concert starts at 8, part of an evening-long Wagner celebration tonight here at 93.9 WNYC. Speaking of students, they feature prominently in the next festival we'll be talking with George about, and we'll do that in just a moment. You're listening to Soundcheck. This is Soundcheck at 93.9 WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm John Schaefer, and at the moment, What I Did on My Summer Vacation. George Preston, WNYC's own music director, is back from Europe, where he visited two festivals. One is, as we said before, one of the oldest and richest in tradition, the Bayreuth Festival in Bavaria. But then you went south over the Alps, or actually into the Alps.
That's right.
To Verbier.
Verbier is a beautiful town. It absolutely stunning natural setting up in the French-speaking portion of the Swiss Alps. And during the winter, it's what else but a ski resort. But they have now, over the past 12 years, established one of the hottest music festivals in Europe, the Verbier Festival and Academy. And I wouldn't say it's all that easy to get to. You fly into Geneva and take a train to near Verbier, then grab a car, get on a bus, and go on the switchback way up into the mountains. But once you get there, it's an absolutely gorgeous setting, and it is like the coolest music camp for classical superstars you ever saw in your life.
So as with Bayreuth, where people go to play and they're not asking for exorbitant fees, people come to Verbier for the experience rather than the cash.
Yeah, and it is a unique experience, I would say, for the soloists that come, because they kind of have to want to hang out with each other and with everyone else who's there, because it's not a very big town. So if you are into spotting classical music stars, this is the place for you. I remember having lunch there on one particular day and looking over on my right hand, and there was a world-famous piano virtuoso talking up an attractive blonde. And on the other hand, there was Thomas Kvasthoff, who sings there and does master classes, a wonderful German baritone, enjoying lunch with a friend of his. And that's just any day in any cafe or restaurant, you look up and say, oh my gosh, isn't that Joshua Bell?
Isn't that Slava Rostropovich smoking a doobie in the back there? It's a pretty informal. It seems like a very informal place.
Yeah.
And I suppose the music making, you had a chance to speak with the guy who put the whole thing together. The music making is sort of informal.
Yeah, it is. This whole thing is the brainchild of a guy named Martin Engström. And Martin was an agent for singers and conductors for a long time in France, and he was also a record company executive at Deutsche Grammophon. And I sat down with him one day, and he described his vision of the Verbier Festival.
Basically, what I call it, a performing arts community. It's a big workshop. It's as far as you can ever get from Salzburg. As a musician, you go to Salzburg with a program you have played 20 times before. You don't take any risks. To Verbier, you come with new repertoire. You have to perform with colleagues you either don't know or have never performed with before. So I'm always trying to put in new challenging repertoire to the artists. I treat them one by one in developing repertoire and developing partnerships.
Martin Engström is the founder of the Verbier Festival in Switzerland, to which our intrepid music director George Preston went this summer, this month. So they're taking some chances, so are the musicians who are agreeing to be kind of put together this way.
Yeah.
How's it work?
It works really well almost all of the time. As with any enterprise where you are taking risks like this, sometimes the chemistry doesn't quite catch fire. And I only heard one performance of one piece on a program where I thought it didn't quite take off. I wouldn't say it was bad. It just didn't seem like it was inspired. But then on the second half of the concert, another group of musicians that doesn't ordinarily play together did an absolutely magical rendition of Franz Schubert's Trout Quintet. And I'm lucky enough to have a little clip of this to play of the Trout Quintet from this season at Verbier. Just take a listen. It was magic.
Thank you. A little bit of music recorded live at the Verbier Festival in Switzerland. Mm-hmm. And George, they sound like they've been doing this together for a long time. Who are these players?
They had like two rehearsals together. It was ridiculous. The pianist is Itamar Golan, who we'll hear this coming season on a concert from the Frick Collection on WNYC. The violinist Salvatore Accardo. Mm-hmm. I was very excited to hear him. He's kind of like one of the elder statesmen of the violin. Violist Julian Racklin, cellist Lynn Harrell, who plays with such personality, and bassist Lee Mesh in the Schubert Trout Quintet there that got stomping, clapping, standing ovation. They had to play part of it over again.
So not only musicians who hadn't played before, but musicians from very different generations,
oh, sure,
too. Big age range there.
Uh-huh.
All right, so we're speaking with George Preston, our music director. Now, we did have a chance to speak with James Levine on this program almost a year ago, I guess. And he was already talking about this year's Verbier Festival, to which he goes every year.
Yeah.
And as I recall, he was doing the Verdi Requiem.
He sure was.
So this is not just chamber music.
Not at all. They're getting more and more orchestral and choral music. And actually, a group from New York, the Collegiate Chorale, went over to Verbier and was the chorus for the Verdi Requiem. And as you can imagine, James Levine gets top-notch soloists to come in and sing. And he's conducting this training orchestra of young musicians in their teens and 20s that really go through an amazing program. Levine sends his first chair players from the Metropolitan Opera Orchestra over, and they workshop the different sections for a couple of weeks before everyone else arrives for the festival. So they are primed to go. And they performed an absolutely searing rendition of the Verdi Requiem. It was very exciting. One of those experiences where when the last notes die off, no one breathes for about 30 seconds, and then the whole hall explodes in applause. But these kids, they love being there. They make a lot of musical connections, a lot of friendships, and they also have the great experience of working with great soloists and conductors such as James Levine. And one guy I talked with, bassist Mike Fuller, loves in particular the way Levine rehearses and works a piece.
Well, I think one of the best things about working with James Levine is that it's not just working on an individual piece, but I think it's this very general way to play an orchestra. He works a lot on balance between the instruments and also just on the character of each individual part. And something about the way he rehearses, I feel like I just learn the piece so much more than maybe with some other conductors because it's such a detailed style that he does.
All right, so that's Mike Fuller, who plays in the Verbier Orchestra, a group of younger players who are getting really an incredible experience.
Yeah, they stay in for about 3 years on average. About a third of the orchestra cycles out every year, and they get 1,500 applications for 30 spots in the orchestra. And I think it's not only the young musicians who get a real kick out of this. I think that James Levine himself loves going there, and he loves working with these young musicians.
I think Verbier is one of those magic places, like Tigerwood, like Aspen. It's set up in such a way that money can't be an issue. It simply can't be. They don't have the budget for it. They're not asking anybody to come except for literally having a wonderful time. They are essentially coming on what might be some vacation time because they want to make music with each other. They want to play some pieces that they don't always get a chance to play and with people they don't always get a chance to play them with.
Conductor James Levine. George, let me ask you. He's up there. The singers are up there. The musicians, especially the wind players, up there. And they are up there.
Yeah.
You're at a high altitude.
It's not ridiculously high. I mean, I was wondering if I would feel the thin air because there's no level ground to walk on in Verbier. I mean, you're going up and down whichever way you're going. So it's about, I don't know, 1,500 or 2,000 meters up. It's fairly well up there, but it's not, the singers didn't seem to have any trouble with the altitude. Let's put it that way.
And you neither.
No. Well, okay. I was kind of on a high of a different sort the whole time I was there. Because
oh, really?
You're looking around you've got to understand that it's not like going to a concert at Carnegie Hall and you walk out one door at the end and the performers go wherever the performers go to their magic performer places at the end of the concert, you know. you go and you go, have your drink afterwards, and there they are. And you see all these other musicians going to each other's recitals and concerts and hanging out at the intermissions, you know, having mm-hmm. a beer or a smoke or something like that outside of the tent. And it is in a big tent, you know. It is very rustic setting. They set up a tent that seats about 1,700, 1,800 people on the parking lot of the ski lift that they use in the winter season. And so it really does have this music camp atmosphere. You just got the world's best musicians there.
Right. Oh, an amazing festival, the Verbier Festival. Now, what, maybe 10 years old?
Something? 12 years old.
12 years yeah. old. Okay. And then, of course, Bayreuth, considerably older.
Considerably
very different sort
older.
Of thing.
Yeah.
So having been to both, George, you making summer plans for next year already?
I am scheming my little brains out already to get back to Bayreuth to hear a new production of The Ring Cycle. Steve Gould will be doing his first Siegfrieds in Bayreuth next year, which is really something, and I want to see the new cycle. And the Collegiate Chorale is going back to be the chorus for Verdi's Otello, among other things, at Verbier, so I might even join the chorus.
All right, George. In addition to collecting some audio clips for us, you took some photos. And
yeah, you can see them on the web at WNYC.org.
On the soundcheck page of our website, WNYC.org, a whole slideshow of George's trip to Bayreuth and to Verbier. George, welcome back, and thanks for joining us.
Well, welcome back to you, John. It's my pleasure.